All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. And good morning, AC. Good morning, Coleman. Let's see who else we got in here. Good morning to everybody in here. Thanks for joining us. We will be having a discussion this morning about eCash. But first, we'll give a quick update, bottom line up front from the Daily Intelligence Bulletin put out by Bitcoin Veterans every day. So if you're unfamiliar with the Daily Intelligence Bulletin, you can find it here on X. You can also find it on Noster. You can find it on the website, bitcoinveterans.org. It is just a brief overview of the news of the day, right? We've got international events. We've got U.S. events. We've got regulatory things. We've got Bitcoin-related things, CBDC-related things, institutional concerns, economic indicators, security concerns, all different topics put together by one of our very own Bitcoin veterans. And just a great addition to any of your news that you like to consume in the morning. So I highly recommend checking out the BTC Daily Intelligence Bulletin or the DIB. Block height at the time of the writing of the DIB was 906,684. New all-time high. Congratulations. Today, for those of you unaware, 22 of July, in the year of our Lord, 2025. Bottom line up front, we have some headlines captured here. Bangladesh mourns students killed in jet crash. Gaza, quote, hell on earth, end quote. Philippines step up to deterrence. House Speaker says Obama may be subpoenaed. MLK assassination docs released. ICE to, quote, flood, end quote, NYC. BOJ may ease USD liquidity. New UN-backed stablecoin for BNI countries. JP Morgan may loan against Bitcoin. Trump media owns $2 billion. I'm assuming that's a Bitcoin. Oh yeah, 16,794 BTC worth of BTC. SpaceX moves BTC. US stocks are up. Zero Trust takes off. Apple to take AI privacy seriously. Quantum Bitcoin Summit maps path forward. So if you're interested in any more details or a quick little blurb on any of those topics, go check out the DIB here on X or on bitcoinveterans.org or on Noster at Bitcoin Veterans as well. One Bitcoin is still worth one Bitcoin, but you can also trade it for around 119,299 cuckbucks, roughly 35.15 ounces of gold, or about 2.8 of the median household. Houses are getting cheaper, y'all. Great news for any young people in your life that are looking to start their family and get a new house. If they can save their excess time and productivity in Bitcoin, those houses are going to be more affordable for them in the future. And I also think there's going to be a lending market for those houses that will augment the stacking of sats. 24-hour high, we hit about 119,310, low of about 116,233 in dollars. Volumes up a little bit, 12%. Market caps hovering around 2.37 trillion. And hash rate up a little bit, 902 exahash per second. And again, if you have never taken the time to write down what that number looks like and exahash per second, I highly recommend it. There's a lot of zeros after 902. Average fee rate sitting around 2 sats per Vbyte. Still very, very cheap to execute a transaction on chain. So if you have Lightning liquidity to manage, Lightning liquidity to manage, or UTXOs to consolidate, or just general business to conduct on Bitcoin, great time to do it because it's still cheap to transact on chain. Not quite as cheap as it was with sub one sat per Vbyte transactions clearing the mempool in recent history. But as we know, the freest market in the world is block space. One of the freest markets in the world is block space. And so if you pay for it, you'll get in a block. Good morning, AC. Welcome. Anything top of mind for you this morning?
Hey, morning, Goblin. I don't know if you want to jump right into it, kind of addressing some of my questions or concerns or thoughts about eCash, and maybe it might be worthwhile to kind of lay a foundation of it. I reached out to you after yesterday's episode, just like when you were calling eCash a shit coin, and then I've got some issues, and maybe I thought it'd be beneficial for others to kind of just, learn a little bit more about eCash, myself included, as far as, the setup, the usage, the recovery, things of that nature.
Absolutely. Yeah. Happy to dive into any of those things. I personally have developed and worked with eCash, both Fedimint and Cashew, and so would be happy to address anything. So I guess let's just start, like, what's your question? If we want to start with just that, and where I can ramble on about what is eCash.
Yeah. So, let's see here. I've used, eNuts, and I know that that went, out of development, pivoted over to Minibits, was exploring different, mints for use. And then a couple months ago, I ran into an issue. I'd sent a transaction, moving from eCash back into Lightning, and it errored out. And ever since then, I haven't been able to get access back to those sats. And I mean, I think this is part of the reason why a lot of people call eCash a shitcoin, because it's not 100% permissionless, right? You are trusting and relying on a third party. In my case, it was the Volts Mint. I've tried reaching out to some of those folks on social media, and it's all been crickets. And in there are caveats with eCash, using small amounts, so I'm okay with that. But I will say that I've had a similar issue on a different mint, and I was able to wipe the wallet, reload from those 12 words, and then go through the, hopefully I'm using the right terminology, but hopefully I was going through the proofs and different increments up until it was able to effectively find those sats within the mint, and I was able to recover it. And so I went through that same process again here with Volts multiple times and haven't been able to recover those sats. So really my thought process or my question is, are those like gone forever, or is there another process that myself or other people could go through as far as recovery utilizing eCash and mints? Because, and really this is kind of the conversation piece of it, is does it really take somebody who is, intellectually curious or somewhat of a techie to be able to go through this process? Because within Bitcoin, we say there is no customer support, and that's a feature, not a bug, right? But if people have to go through this massive rabbit hole just to be able to recover a small amount of sats, that's probably a large barrier to entry. And so, yeah, I'll stop there, and maybe we can kind of dive in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess let's with all of that as the predicate. Also, good morning, BFP. Welcome up to the stage. With that, I think it does warrant probably an overview of what eCash is, or what Cashew is, what Fedimint is, et cetera. The biggest delineator, I would say, and you'll see Cashew as the more proliferated eCash solution that's being offered out there. And the difference between Cashew and Fedimint is Fedimint uses a federated model very similar to Liquid, where there's members of the federation and you have to have an honest majority of the federation for things to keep working. But that honest majority is sort of forced by this consensus engine in Fedimint, a little bit outside of the scope of today. So we won't dive too much into it, but think of Fedimint as more of like your Liquid, where Cashew is a single entity running the mint. But what does it even mean? Like, what is a mint? You know what I mean? The mint, so Cashew itself, or eCash rather, is arguably one of the first digital currencies that was sort of ideated on. If you look back in history, David Chaum was the name of the individual that sort of invented this blinded signature scheme. To be very specific, it's a blinded Diffie-Hellman key exchange, meaning one side of the party does this cryptographic blinding mechanism, which is just like arithmetic using cryptography. And then that cryptographic blinding mechanism makes it so I as a user send it to the mint and I blind it. They sign it and they return it back to me. And then I unblind that token. Upon unblinding, the mint now has no idea where this token originated from. However, they do know that it's a valid signature. So it's like if I were to give you a piece of, a carbon copy envelope with a piece of paper inside of it, you don't know what's on that piece of paper. But, you know, we can negotiate and say, hey, this is a contract for like 100 sats or something like that. And you as a mint would sign it, return it to me. And now I can take that piece of paper out and I have your signature on there and it's a value of 100 sats. And I can go give it to BFP. And when BFP brings it back to you, he has no idea that that 100 sats token was issued to me, right? So there's a break in linkage between issuance and redemption. And then it's a shitcoin, not because, for the reasons that you stated, it's a shitcoin because it's not Bitcoin, right? You are not holding the keys for your Bitcoin when you are using eCash. You are trusting the mint to hold the keys if you want that mint to have sort of a one-to-one reserve of Bitcoin to eCash. Now, there are ways you can totally inflate the supply of eCash versus sats, right? So there is a trust assumption going on here. But in my opinion, as long as we have custodians custodying Bitcoin for people, providing lightning services for people, why would you not want the privacy benefits that eCash brings? The other advantage of sort of eCash is you can do smaller amounts, right? You can't really receive 200 sats in a brand new Lightning channel. I mean, you can, but you're going to hit the chain and it doesn't really make economic sense. Now, some of the LSPs like Phoenix and other stuff have sort of figured out ways of absorbing or charging the costs for these channel managements. But in Cashew, you have a single mint that runs a Lightning node on behalf of the mint. And so they're managing all of that Lightning liquidity. And the only thing you're doing is you're either coming in or out. And the sort of, one of the advantages is I can go from eCash to eCash and now I never have to hit Lightning, right? I never have to get hit with a fee unless the mint is charging a fee on like eCash to eCash transfers. It is a custodial shitcoin, right? But it offers privacy and it offers these offline payment mechanisms, right? Because the data, the thing that you're getting is the actual valid signature representation. You can pass that around, right? I've sent people eCash via Signal. I've sent people, you can send, Elon, his app here that we have, I can send eCash in DMs, right? If you saw Jack Dorsey or Cali BTC's recent BitChat application that does like peer-to-peer Bluetooth communications, they integrated eCash with it because you don't necessarily need the internet for both parties to transact in eCash. Now, there are some like trust assumptions there again as well, but if you're going to be using a custodian, I would argue that a privacy-preserving custodian is a net benefit to its users over one that's not. And the other thing is there is a rug risk, right? There's a chance that the mint just sort of disappears. Like you alluded to, there was like sort of some testing mints that established like this is a relatively newer protocol that's being developed. And so people were running like beta testing. And you're correct in saying don't put too many sats in there. But the nice thing is once you get to, 100,000 sats, 200,000 sats worth of eCash, it's connected over Lightning. So you can sweep that to whichever wallet you prefer. You can sweep that to your own self-sovereign Lightning node, or you can sweep it potentially even on-chain, doing like a Lightning to on-chain swap, et cetera. So it gives some optionality. And then it's also very, very deeply integrated with the Nostr ecosystem. So there are actually Nostr improvement proposals or NIPs out there for handling eCash. They call them nut zaps, right? So instead of doing a normal Lightning transaction on Nostr for a zap, you can actually lock eCash to a specific public key, which is how people are identified on Nostr. And then only that public key can come back and redeem it. And I've even seen it where it's sort of like a decaying condition where, I lock it to your public key, your Nostr public key or your Nostr profile. And after, 30 days, if you haven't redeemed it, I can just like sweep it back to myself. So there's a lot of like user experience benefits that come from using eCash. But again, as you've discovered, it's still a little bit awkward and like the recovery and, some of these other applications that are newer, make it a little difficult. It's like, holding your own keys back in the day with Bitcoin before we had seed phrases and hardware wallets. There's a pain point. There's a friction. And if it's not clear to you, it might be difficult. So I don't think that necessarily answers your specific question, but my recommendation would be to try out recovery and other eCash wallets, like try a web wallet. Cashew.space is the website I would recommend going to get started on like, what is this thing? And perhaps like, what are some of these different applications that support this eCash protocol. But yeah, if you try a different wallet, and the way it works is very similar to a Bitcoin wallet, where you have your master seed phrase that you sort of derive all your addresses from. In a Cashew wallet, you're sort of deriving a bunch of secrets from the same seed phrase, and then those secrets are used in the creation of the blinded signatures, etc. So those are secrets that you, as a user, has in safeguards, right? And that's why you can back it up with a seed phrase and transfer it between devices. But depending on sort of how the mint is implemented and how the recovery is implemented, I can definitely see how there might be like a snag where you go to recover the mint. I would say if it was a wallet that you used a lot, then it might take a very long time. So I have, you know, just one eCash wallet that I've been using and testing with for a long time. And there's a lot of transactions in there. And so when I go to recover that thing, it takes a long time, because it has to go through all these different potential secrets that it used to actually get to the recovery mechanism of, you know, current point in time. So there's definitely friction and some pain points, but you might just have to chalk it up to like those sats are no longer yours anymore. And this is one of the risks of trusting a custodian, right? Does that help? Does that answer any of your questions or provide any clarity?
Yeah, no, that's perfect. I've done pretty much what you've described. I've gone through with those 12 words, like three different wallets, including a web wallet, and gone through the different increments up to like, you know, 3,000 proofs. But you know, for me, this is like a learning process, and so yeah, it's like I said, it's another one of those paths along the rabbit hole that you know, as an intellectually curious Bitcoiner, we've got to go through. And it helps not only us in our understanding, but in our conversations with other people, to be able to convey or connect with people who are, you know, later on in their journey.
Yeah, totally. And there's a few other domains that I think that eCash is really going to shine. The first is sort of in like AI, right? Because it's just data. If you're talking to an API or some other like AI thing, you can just put that data in the request header, right? So every time you hit a website, you're sending a request out to a server somewhere. And in that, there's these things called headers, right? Which is just extra data that's sort of in the header of the message. And funny enough, back in the day when HTTP, which is the protocol that runs the internet, right? If you look up in your browser, you have https://x.com, right? Well, that HTTP specification actually had an error code or a response code called 402, which is payment required. Now, back at that time, there was no Bitcoin, right? There was no way of, you know, paying on the internet natively. You had to integrate with the fiat rails. And as most Bitcoiners understand, that becomes a huge pain point and a bottleneck for innovation. But because now you can just put a Cashew token or an eCash token in the header of this HTTP request, if you're going to access a website or some resource, maybe it's an API call to an AI agent, right? You're talking to Grok. There's no reason why you can't have a balance of eCash tokens that are quote unquote like usage tokens, right? But you still get that same privacy preserving properties. So if I go to an AI provider and I buy a bunch of usage tokens for however many sats or whatever, when I send those back in the request, they have no idea the origination. So that's that blinding mechanism that eCash introduces to this whole paradigm. I would say the second thing that I think is yet to be explored in full is something that I demonstrated live at BTC++ in May, I think it was, down in Austin, but it was eHash, right? So if you're familiar with mining, every time you mine, you are up to a pool at least, you're submitting something called a share. That share is representative of like an OMOS block. It's a weak block. It's a block that's valid, but not with enough leading zeros or not with enough difficulty or proof of work on it for the entire network to count it. But statistically speaking, it is enough for me as a pool operator to know that you've been doing the computational cycles of 256 to try to mine that next block. And so I can reward you for that thing with basically counting each one of these shares that you submit as like, hey, I got it. It's on record. Let me tally up your account here that you've been contributing hash rate to it. Well, what happens when you start to issue these blinded tokens for every single share, right? Now you get this sort of pseudo marketplace where up until the point that a block is found or that a pool pays out its miners, these outstanding eHash tokens have no concrete value, but there is a speculation to it. And because the way that eCash works and its deep integration with Nostr and a bunch of other applications, you can just switch the flip to have eHash enabled for any existing application. And now you can benefit from having an open marketplace for your hash rate. Once a block is found though, now you have a definitive value of those outstanding eHash tokens, right? So it's, if you mined, let's say 1,000 shares to my pool and I issued you 1,000 eHash, and BFP mined, 100 shares and I issued him 100 eHash, and Texas did 2,000 shares or something like that. Up until that payout, there's no definitive way of telling what that valuation is. But me as a pool, if I wanted to create sort of like a synthetic stabilization, often referred to as FPPS or full pay per share, I can say, hey, I will buy back every one of your eHash tokens for a set SAT denomination. Now, me as a pool, I don't know, right? Like definitively if those are going to be worth anything, but based on hash rate, it's a guess. It's a speculation, but it doesn't have to be me as a pool doing that, right? Your local OG with you and your BitAx army at your local meetup could be like, oh yeah, I'll buy 50% of all your eHash shares for this price per share sort of thing. And what they're doing is they're speculating that once that payout happens, once that block is found, and now there's a definitive amount where we know exactly how much Bitcoin was earned in this window of time. And we know exactly how many eHash tokens were issued in this window of time. And you do very simple math to determine the value of those tokens individually. And now you have like a redemption window of like, hey, come claim the sats that we mine together as a pool. And so if you're out there buying up all these other, all these sats, the goal is to spend less buying the eHash, then you are rewarded once the sats are paid out. I'm going to pause there for any questions. That was like a lot to cover, but that's a project. If you're interested, hashpool.dev is the landing page for that. And one of my good friends is working on that. And I've been consulting sort of on the mining side of things. Additionally, good morning, Texas Toast. Welcome up to the stage. Wanted to give Texas and BFP a chance to say anything, ask any questions, or just say good morning to the rest of the crowd.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, I missed most of it. I haven't messed around with eCash hardly at all. I've seen a lot of people talk about it, Wicked being one big one that has been talking about it for a while. Seems really interesting in a lot of different applications with like, what, Fetty Mints and all this. I don't know. I'm a smooth brain guy, so a lot of it's over my head, but seems cool.
Yeah, no worries. It's interesting. One of the developers is working on something which is like a graduated custody model for wallets. And you've seen this in the past. The Mutiny wallet was the first one to try to work on that. And one of the same developers that was working on that is doing a similar thing. You can also look at Zeus wallet is implementing the same thing where you want to receive your first, 100 sats. Like I said, it doesn't necessarily make economic sense to do that with a brand new Lightning channel, especially self-custodial Lightning channel to a phone, to some brand new person that doesn't understand much about Bitcoin, but you can still demonstrate the power of it. And so what Zeus has done and what there's some libraries being developed to is, up until a certain point, the denomination is all in eCash, right? So you have this privacy preserving custodial trust model with whatever mint that you choose, largely it's like encoded into the token itself. So when I send you eCash, you see what mint I'm trusting. And now you can either sweep it over Lightning to your own Lightning node, or you can just accept the trust trade off there for that mint. And once you build up a balance sufficient enough, and this is where the graduated part comes in, is once you get up to, 100,000, 200,000, 500,000 sats, now it starts to make a little bit more economic sense for you to pay those fees to get some Lightning liquidity and open an actual channel. And then the next graduated step from that, which you see with, some other wallets, is maybe you don't want Lightning. Maybe now you start to have like 1 million, 2 million sats in this wallet, and you don't necessarily want all that liquidity locked up in a Lightning channel. You can just sweep it on chain. So some very interesting use cases there. And again, my assertion is it is the best shit coin out there. It is not Bitcoin. It is an IOU for Bitcoin. And anybody telling you otherwise should not be trusted. It is a representation of Bitcoin, but it is a custodial model that gives you different trade-offs, right? Everything in this world, I think the most relevant trade-off that we as veterans understand is like speed versus security. You know, when you're going to do like a road crossing with like small unit training, you're taught that, hey, there's a hasty crossing where it's just like you just got post dudes up and just everybody just kind of goes. Or you can do a slow, deliberate crossing where it's like you post guys up both ways. One guy goes across, sets it up. Like you can do a very slow and deliberate way. And so there's trade-offs with everything, right? There's one thing may or may not make sense in one scenario versus another. Yeah, I saw you come off mute briefly, so I wanted to see if you had anything to say. Sorry, go ahead, Texas.
No, you're good. I was just going to say I always hated the slow, deliberate crossings. They were annoying, especially when you're training. You're just like looking back and forth across the road at nothing.
Yeah, for sure. And in training, it's like the most boring thing you could do. But in the real world, you know, it could save a life.
I was thinking about, you know, I got into it a little bit with this dude, Bitcoin Tina, about just like the future of Bitcoin and people saying that fiat is not going to, or he said people are saying fiat is going to exist. I don't believe that's going to be the case, at least in the form of how we think of it now. I kind of see this parallel, protocol, in this is like 100 years out where it's not Bitcoin. It's relying on Bitcoin and it has like some sort of AI, you know, run protocol that is giving people some kind of something for credit. And I don't know if it's going to be run on something like this or something like an eCash or something like a, some weird vetting man, but I was just starting to think about this stuff, but I don't know if you have any thoughts on like extreme future scenario of like parallel, the stuff that needs Bitcoin or is relying on Bitcoin, but is not Bitcoin. That's kind of seems like kind of what this stuff is.
No, yeah, you reminded me of a great article that I just posted under the BB handle. It's titled simply Cashew, Bitcoin Free Banking. And that's essentially what it's sort of emulating, right? Is the free banking era. You know, you think about like the Medicis during the Renaissance where there was hard money backing the banking system, before all the chicanery and shenanigans. Not to say that it didn't happen back then, but the only way to sort of audit the bank in a free banking system is to run the bank. And there are some proposals out there. And this is, you know, the creator of the Cashew protocol, CalABTC, actually developed and theorized around, you know, the best way to sort of audit a mint is to use multiple mints, right? You can use small de minimis amounts and there are ways to do multi-mint payments, meaning if I have 500 sats across 10 different mints, I can do, you know, up to 5,000 sats worth of payments by using all of those mints. And now you further enhance the privacy proposition of it. But more generally, if you wanted to sweep from one mint to the next, and there's a bot out there that just sort of does it, it deposits sats into these various mints. And then in a sort of a pseudo random round robin fashion, we'll go through and run the bank of that balance, right? It will go through and sweep all of the liquidity that has been issued there. Now it's not all users, right? You'd want like a complete 100% all users sort of exit via Lightning or choose to do a redemption at the same time to fully audit that. But cryptographically speaking, the Mint could publish its database of outstanding issuances and you could square that up 100%. And that's something I see probably more likely in like the mining side of things with eHash. BFP, what you got?
I was just gonna throw my two cents in with the eCash. I play a little bit with it with the Fediment. I have that app, and then the Cashew. Like it's a It's a web application and I have it on my phone. So I have some sats in eCash or Cashew or whatever. But I was talking to TC when I first learned about it, and he basically analogized it as a casino. So if you think about a casino, you go in and, you know, you get your chips or whatever. Say you're playing blackjack, you get your chips. You can't spend those in the outside world. So they're trash coins. But then you change them in at the end and you move on. So it's like a Bitcoin layer 3 or whatever is the way I think of it. But I'm not too tech heavy.
Yeah, no, that's a good assertion. It's definitely a layer of money. My go-to analogy is not necessarily casino just because of the connotations of degeneracy there. But you can definitely think of it as a gift card, right? And this is an interesting proposition where, you as a business, you know, maybe you want to have some loyalty program, or, you know, you go to Starbucks or you go to whatever insert, you know, chain, and there's always some kind of mailing list loyalty thing that you can sign up for. Airline miles is a great example, right? What are you going to use to buy your airline miles? I don't know, but whatever American Airlines, whatever United allows you to, what are you going to use to buy, you know, Best Buy gift card with? Probably something at Best Buy. Now there's probably a secondary market where you can go trade that gift card or whatever other points for things that people want. And the same thing applies with eCash or Cashew, where you have a single entity, let's call it, you know, Cashew Mart, is running a gift card for their business, Cashew Mart. And yeah, you buy credits at their store. And they may or may not allow for you to redeem those, you know, out over Lightning or for something else, but you are essentially buying credit to the store. But you're buying in a way that is privacy preserving, right? And as we, many of us understand and know, in today's world, we live in a very, very robust digital panopticon. And so any place that you can eke out additional privacy, I think is a good place to explore and to try to understand. But yeah, great analogy with like casino chips, right? You take casino chips from, I've never been to Vegas, so I don't know, like the MGM, and you take it to some other place, and like you can't use those chips at a different location, right? But you might be able to find somebody on the street that's willing to swap you for a few bucks.
Well, think of poker. So if you're getting together with a bunch of guys and playing, a friendly game of poker, if you have chips, it makes it that much more easy. So I just think it's a good analogy. Analogies are never perfect. Your gift card analogy works, but it's kind of really a big part in the future of gambling online, I think, because it makes it convenient for everyone.
Well, I mean, Bitcoin, I think the original Bitcoin node had the beginnings of a poker client within it, right? So many historic use cases and points to digital internet money used for online gambling. Not necessarily my preferred use case, but you're free to do whatever
you want. That's how a lot of people get into Bitcoin. Yeah,
everybody comes for the speculative number go up, and ideally most people stay for the freedom and revolution, monetary revolution that's undergoing, underpinned by cryptographic irrefutable math.
Yeah, that's probably the thing it does to money more than the ability to gamble online. It fixes the money.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're going to pause here to just do a quick shout out for an upcoming event that Bitcoin Veterans is putting on. Right off the bat, bitcoinveterans.org/summit2025 is a website where you can go find out more information. But the Bitcoin Veterans are teaming up with the guys over at Bitcoin Park to put on a two-day summit in November, November 10th and 11th specifically. The first day, November 10th, that's a Monday, is going to be just panels, speakers, your sort of standard mini conference series. But we will have hands-on workshops for all different kinds of topics and techniques. And the speakers and panels are going to be stacked with experts in various domains, mostly Bitcoin veterans themselves, which if you're unaware, we are myriad, we are legion, we are across the industry and in a number of different ways, very much like any other industry where veterans have always found that their motivation, their drive, and their skills can be applied elsewhere and excel. So that's day one, speakers and panels. Day two is going to be range stuff and other day, or range day and other stuff. Sorry. Where we're going to shoot guns, right? We're going to go out to a ranch just outside of Nashville, and we're probably going to have some good food. And if you are a beginner, it's a great place to come out in a safe environment to learn from top tier firearms experts on what it is, what's a gun, hold a pistol, learn how it works, send your first bullets down range, get comfortable with it. But if you're an intermediate or advanced shooter, we're going to have a lane for you as well, right? So we're going to do some shooting and moving, some more advanced drills for those that have the experience. But either way, it's going to be a good time to build up that capability of being peaceful and not just being a harmless individual. So November 10th and 11th, Bitcoin Veterans Summit 2025 happening in Nashville at Bitcoin Park. For more information, check out bitcoinveterans.org/summit2025 or reach out to us here on X or on Noster or via email. There's a contact form on the Bitcoin Veterans website as well. So tell your friends. You don't have to be a veteran to attend. Like I said, the veterans will be largely running the show. So come out and learn some good things. And fun fact, that third day, that Wednesday, is actually going to be a Nosterville event at Bitcoin Park, exploring this new sort of censorship-resistant, digital signature-based protocol that's largely being used for social media and a lot of other stuff called Noster. So it'll be a good time in Nashville either way, and I look forward to seeing a bunch of y'all out there. So I have a question. Any of you gents on the stage, were you harassing this fella, Jared Hardin, who seemed to have gotten some spicy takes from the Bitcoin community here on Twitter after his comment around BTC bros are some of the most optimistic, dumbest people on the planet. Quote, it's gone up a lot, end quote, is their only argument as to why it's worthwhile. Any of you guys interact with that fella?
Yeah. I told him he was a stupid bitch. I actually just invited him up. And I noticed, cause that's funny that you just mentioned that, because he follows Bitcoin Veterans now. Seems like, yeah, he's an old Air Force guy. So, it'd be cool to get him in here and see. I mean, it makes sense that he's an Air Force guy cause he's a smooth brain dumbass. But yeah, he needs to get his head out of his ass and, start learning about it instead of spouting off.
Well, I see that you're going after the hearts and minds. I will take a different approach, and we don't know what we don't know until we know it, right? We were all smooth-braced dumbasses up until a point, and many of us in the Bitcoin veterans and veterans community more broadly continue to be smooth-braced dumbasses and highly regarded in many ways. But yeah, I reached out via DMs, replied to a few of his notes. I definitely gave him some shit for being Air Force. But there's nothing wrong with being curious and being wrong on the curious side. But I do hope he takes us up on the offer on coming up on stage, because I saw a lot of hate going his way and some replies from the Bitcoiners and lots of memes over his profile picture. But if he's willing to chat, happy to do it here or otherwise in DMs or a private conversation, which might be more palatable for some people.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I'm going to use a harsher tactic on veterans that I know can probably have a little thicker skin. So, you know, for all those non veterans out there that think I'm a big meanie, we all talk shit to each other. You can't take it. I don't know. It's really not my problem. So
I think in all the normies defense, you know, people that don't get it, it's tough to see the most revolutionary change in monetary, you know, in our world of monetary things, the change is so monumental. It's tough to see because it's, you know, everybody in this generation is used to what we're used to. So kudos to everyone who does see it.
Yeah, absolutely. And good morning, Tao. I see you up on the stage. If you had something quickly to say.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, it's hard to grasp something that's new. So you can't completely blame them because it's like the concept is just so new. Like it blows people's mind that what is this? And I think a lot of us have gone through that sort of situation where when we first hear about it, we literally say, hey, this is impossible sort of thing, right? Until at some point they start to look up, they get the curiosity and they start learning. And I think sooner or later, these people will turn around.
No, absolutely. And I mean, kudos to the guy for at least engaging, right? Whether that, you know, if he's looking to learn, he came to the right place and asking the right questions. But I did see there was one. So one of the responses to his initial post was, you know, hey, all these comments and there's still no good answers to these questions. And the three questions, and I'll summarize them because some are lengthy, but the first question is like, how will it survive the government trying to shut it down? The second question is more along like the volatility. How can it be handled? How will the risk-free rate be calculated if BTC is the predominant form of money? And then the third one is talking about the small minority of Bitcoin owners who own the vast majority of it, you know, how that's being handled. So let's try to go through here and sort of adjust and talk about each of these questions, because I think they're valid questions, right, that many of us along our journey have had. And the first one is, you know, how will it survive if the government tries to shut it down? I think we have a very, very clear example of that with the China ban. If you go back and look in 2021, China banned Bitcoin, Bitcoin mining, etc. Go check out the mempool.space hash rate chart and go look at the all-time hash rate. And 2021 is a blip on that chart. It's a very noticeable blip, but it is a blip on that chart. And then additionally, there are many ways of doing things on the internet that the government doesn't like you to do, right? Being a former Navy intelligence spook, I can attest to that very, very directly. So you'd have to shut down the internet or have some sort of major catastrophic modern electronics crisis for Bitcoin to be stopped. And I don't think any one government's going to want to do that to their citizenry. You know, they might try to do that jurisdictionally, but even if the entirety of the US decided to opt out of Bitcoin somehow and they figured out how to shut down the internet and all the nodes running it and stop all the savage psychopathic Bitcoiners from transacting, there's still Bitcoin nodes not in the United States, right? So a jurisdiction can merely opt out of Bitcoin by trying to close the doors. But as we've seen in one of the most iron-fisted jurisdictions, China, they tried that. It didn't work. I see several hands. We got a new speaker on the stage, Hunter. So why don't you kick it off first? Good morning, Hunter. Welcome.
Hey, Goblin. Thanks for having me up. I got a different take on this Jared guy. I honestly think a lot of this is engagement farming. I think that, you know, Bitcoiners are just chomping at the bit to defend Bitcoin, and it's just a real easy grift to kind of get on there and just start pumping out really old FUD and playing dumb. I mean, there's just no way if this guy spent more than an hour studying the subject, he couldn't find answers to most of these questions. I think he's just playing us all for engagement and for monetary value. I don't know. It just can't be that dumb.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I took the bait and I always have fun correcting the FUD because it triggers my tism. So it definitely could have been an engagement bait if it wasn't genuine, but I always assume the best of intentions and will engage. But I'm also new back here on X, so maybe I'm just being sucked into the algorithm. We'll say AC next. I think you had your hand up next. Sorry if I'm mistaken.
No, all good. Yeah, you know, I poked fun with Jared as well. If he's listening, either under his handle or anonymously, like you guys have already said, invite him upstage. I threw something up in the nest, like a good military person. I did some open source research and found his LinkedIn as well, and see that he's also, you know, an RIA. And in previous conversations we've had on this space about orange pilling people, one of the things that we talked about was kind of meeting people where they are. And so I took it at face value that it was genuine. He really didn't understand Bitcoin, hadn't put in the proof of work. But I did want to share with him an episode that was recently on Natalie Brunell's show, where she had Rick Edelman, who is a pretty well-known RIA in those circles. I'm not an RIA, so.
What is an RIA? I don't know what that acronym means.
I think it's like a registered investment advisor or something like that. This guy, Rick Edelman, he went through these mistaken beliefs and he listed out six of them. And not surprisingly, I think those six kind of covered all of Jared's misconceptions. So I did kind of invite him to, hey, why don't you check out this episode? This is somebody in your circle, again, meeting people where they are that maybe this is something that would resonate with him because they speak the same language. But I also agree with Hunter. This is probably quite a bit of engagement farming at the same time.
Yeah, he's trying to boost his number for his asphalt striping business. Tao, did you have anything to say on the topic?
Yeah, just going back to the guy or you said that was concerned about government banning that question. I think there's just a fundamental misunderstanding about where we stand in regards to Bitcoin and how it relates to the government and how the government views it. If you think about it, I mean, we're about to have a strategic Bitcoin reserve, you know, at the federal level. I mean, at the state level, there's a few states that have passed, I believe.
New Hampshire, Texas, and Arizona.
Right. And so there's like a misunderstanding, like governments are embracing Bitcoin. It's like this notion about, oh, they're going to ban it, they're going to do this. That's already off the table a long time ago, right? I think they probably initially tried to prevent it from like proliferating or something. And it's just too difficult. And it's global too. So there's just so many things I think that the people who are concerned about governments banning, they still are not seeing that bigger picture. And I just want to call that out.
Yeah, I mean, once you understand it, you realize that the governments need it. Like, it's not like they can do anything about it. They're going to have it because of what it is. So it's going to be interesting over time to see. Like that was one of the oldest FUDs I heard from one of my cousins who works at one of the big major banks, and I love to show him that screenshot of him texting me saying like, oh, it's, you know, too good to be true. The governments are never going to let this happen. And he's starting to get it, but that's like definitely an entry level, FUD point that people latch on to as soon as they kind of start to understand you telling them how good it is. And they're like, no, it's too good. Can't work.
Yeah, absolutely. I think another point too that takes a different tact is if you point to the Human Rights Foundation and specifically Alex Gladstein's book called Check Your Financial Privilege, you know, this book covers the use case of Bitcoin in despotic regimes under tyranny and oppression. Specifically, you know, Putin's opposition is using Bitcoin because the Russian government shut down all their banking. And then when SWIFT cut off Russia from their network, it made it even harder for doing any kind of traditional finance rails. So the Human Rights Foundation, they had speakers at the Bitcoin Policy Institute. And so just another illustration of sort of the quote unquote power of government to do anything about this. I want to keep going. I do have a hard stop right at the top of the hour. I want to keep going to the next one, which is the FUD around volatility. And the interesting thing about that, as he mentions, you know, risk-free rate calculation, if Bitcoin is a predominant form of money. But what I'm guessing that he hasn't done yet is done the calculations with Bitcoin as the base unit, right? So if you flip anything on its head and you're not worried about the number go up in dollar terms, and you're more focused on Bitcoin's purchasing power, meaning for one Bitcoin, what can I acquire? Right. We covered in the DIB this morning. You can acquire 0.28 of a median US home right now. That has gone down significantly. The affordability of things go down in Bitcoin terms if you're using it as your base unit of account. He also mentioned bond markets. Apparently he has not watched Andrew Hone's specific video on Bitbonds, where you're combining Bitcoin with this bond structure to essentially capture the upside of the purchasing power of Bitcoin for both participants in that bond. Not to mention that, you know, Battery Finance, which is Andrew Hone's company, is doing Bitcoin-backed mortgages where I believe it's a 10-year note for the property itself, a commercial property, and then some percentage or some denomination of that went into purchase Bitcoin. And there's an early out clause, but generally speaking, after the first 4 years of that loan term, both parties, lender and borrower, receive appreciation of the upside of that loan. So you're using Bitcoin in these bond/loan structures as sort of, the Uber collateral, right? It's better than a house. It can't burn down. It's better than any other assets you might have that are primarily dollar denominated because it's not impacted by inflation. And in fact, everything is getting cheaper in it. So when you're looking at from a purchasing power standpoint, if you lock up one Bitcoin as collateral for a 5 to 10 year loan, at the end of it, the upside is going to be fantastic for both sides of the party. So it just makes sense to do that. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that sort of products and offerings come to market, where Bitcoin is finally being realized as collateral, as the best collateral for anything you might want to do. And then again, we got about 10 minutes left. How did you still have your hand up, or is that a glitch on my side?
Glitch.
Glitch it is. All right. We're going to roll on to the next one. So volatility, right? Go look at the Weimar Germany chart of the price of gold. It's hyper volatile. But as we know, as Bitcoiners, the volatility is largely to the upside when you zoom out. Now, if you're looking at intraday trading, if you're trying to be a trader and technical analysis, like, one, you're not going to be Dr. Jeff, so go follow him on Noster and just do what he does. But two, if you're just a general person that doesn't want to sit at a desk and watch charts all day, and you want to just go paint lines on asphalt, the best thing you can do with the excess savings that you have is to sweep it into something that can't be debased. Sweep it into something that you don't need to have a trusted counterparty on to maintain its value or put your money to work or whatever it is. And then lastly, there's a third point that he kind of brought up, is the FUD, where it's like, hey, there's all these OGs and they've got all the Bitcoin. My counter to that is the rules work for the same for everyone, right? It doesn't matter if you have a million Bitcoin or if you have, you know, 0.0001 Bitcoin. The rules of the Bitcoin network are the same. And this is something that I don't think humanity has seen, where it doesn't matter your place, position, you know, race, color, creed, amount of net worth, but the rules of how this thing operates are the same, and they're based on irrefutable mathematics, right? They're based on cryptography. So it's not like any amount of force, coercion, or wealth can break cryptography for you. That's a whole other story if you believe in the whole quantum FUD, but we're a long ways off from that being a credible threat, in my opinion. But Donald Trump, Michael Saylor, you know, Vladimir Putin, Bitcoin works the same for those guys as it does for some, you know, street rat in a developing nation somewhere, right? It works the same for them as it does for me. It works the same for them as it does for, you know, my plumber or my neighbor or whoever wants to opt into this system. And arguably, with the predetermined supply issuance and the, you know, the algorithmic engineered factors of the money, you know what you're getting into, right? So if you know that there's a bunch of people early on that got it, that are maybe holding on to it, the worst thing you can do is dump it all onto the market. But guess what? The rest of the Bitcoiners that understand what's going on here are going to gobble it up pretty quickly. And the stackers and the hodlers set the floor of price in terms of USD and everything else. And so if you want to dump all your Bitcoin because you're some OG, like, that's fine. Go get the trash cash and put it to good use, right? There's a lot of people that had life-changing money now because they got, you know, they figured it out early or they got lucky, however you want to call it. But the fact remains that the rules of the Bitcoin network, the rules of consensus that govern this system, this new monetary system that is global, is the same for everybody. It is like the most egalitarian thing. It's like the beautiful marriage between capitalism and communism, right? It's like everybody gets the same, but everybody is able to, you know, accrue value to their balance sheet in a way that cannot be fucked with by other people.
Yeah, Jack Mallers had a really good Monday show that he does where he kind of rolls through, you know, what the monetary regime is planning on doing. And that's exactly how he kind of puts it, is that Bitcoin's the wonderful cake that is going to be not to be gobbled up, but yeah, it's really, really good watch. Highly recommended. It's short. It's only like an hour.
Yeah. Mallers, big fan of Mallers. He spits fire when he does speak, and he definitely resonates with, a different generation than the one I came from, but it still hits pretty hard when you watch it because I've got younger siblings that it hit home really, really hard. I think it was recent, it's a European conference or something. He gave a keynote speech that was a real, real banger. All right. Anybody have any other last minute topics before we close out at the close to the top of the hour here?
I got a Noster question for you, Goblin, because I know you're heavily involved in that protocol. Do you know if there's anything being developed that is similar to what we're doing right here with this X Spaces? Because it'd be really cool if we had like a, you know, a show over there that we could get going.
Yeah, absolutely. There are two projects that I know of that are sort of emulating this. I think they've kind of collapsed into one, but if you go to hivetalk.org, so HIVETalk.org, they essentially created a Spaces, Jitsi, Zoom sort of meeting, but it's all Noster, right? And the nice thing about Noster is you don't need to have an account to sign up. You can just generate a key on the fly, or you can use your existing key pair to sort of participate in any new application that comes on board. So, yes, it exists, hivetalk.org. Let me go ahead and just post that as a note or whatever on X. But yeah, you can go in there, join a room, invite your friends. And the cool thing about it is you could set up zaps, right? So in Noster, you can zap people, right? And zaps are just tips over Lightning or over eCash, as we covered earlier. So it's kind of a novel paradigm. And I think some of these bigger spaces, and maybe this one itself, can figure out how to bridge the gap between the two. And that's probably the biggest hurdle that has yet to be discovered. It's a powerful thing, because you are doing direct to your audience, you know, monetization. So no longer do you need to sell advertising space necessarily. And you see this with like the podcasting 2.0, which is also very, very integrated with Noster. But you as a speaker in a space, or you with a follower base, you don't need a blue check. You don't need a minimum number of followers. You don't need, you know, some Instagram subscription thing. Your content can be immediately monetized. And so, yes, to answer your question directly, HiveTalk is probably the best example of, you know, real-time video and audio calls with no, you know, plugin or login or download. You can just get started and share a link. So I highly recommend checking that out. All right, folks. Well, that is all I've got for you today. Thanks everybody for coming out to the space. Don't shitcoin. It only lowers your IQ even more so than eating crayons. So definitely don't shitcoin. And if you must shitcoin, I recommend checking out eCash and Cashew as a shitcoin, but only because it offers privacy, which is very, very valuable. But I want to thank everybody for coming up on the space today. All the speakers and the co-hosts, for helping me along on this journey. And I truly hope that Jared listens to this, or at least reaches out to the Bitcoin Veterans handle to get a less aggressive education on Bitcoin compared to what he engagement farmed for.
Yeah, I think the Bitcoin Veterans would welcome him with open arms. And I may have been harsh in my critique, but if he came with good faith and wanted to learn, you know, we would rag on him momentarily for the branch of service, but then it's all good from there.
Totally. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in today. We will be back again tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, with more Bitcoin Veterans content and retardation. Thank you all for joining us.